Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Loading punt. Tompkins takes it at the 40. Makes the first man miss. Second one miss. 45, 50. Tompkins, 40 near side. 30. Cuts inside 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. The Nittany Lions' first score of the year. A punt return for a score by DeAndre Tompkins. And for the first time since Derek Williams in 2008, the Nittany Lions have returned a punt for a score. McSorley back. Looks right. Now fires that way. Gesicki's got it. Touchdown, Penn State. And the Nittany Lions cash in the Imani Oruwe interception and take it 75 yards the other way. Second and goal. McSorley, quarterback draw, wide open, walks into the end zone. Touchdown, Penn State. Play clock down to 10. Barkley to the right. McSorley. Gives it to Barkley, left side, following man. Touchdown, Penn State. Give it to Barkley, sweeping far side, 30, 25, 20. Barkley, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Penn State. Saquon Barkley from 30 yards out. Right, kicking toward the north end zone. Good snap, foot down. The kick by Davis is on its way. The kick by Tyler Davis is gone. A career-long 47-yard field goal for Tyler Davis. 1:07 to go here in the third. Back goes McSorley. Sets, waits, delivers. Gesicki, goal line, touchdown. Penn State far corner. And the Nittany Lions now lead it 44-0. He'll keep it himself to the five. Tommy Stevens, touchdown, Penn State. Tommy Stevens' third career touchdown, and the Nittany Lions crack the 50-point barrier.
I thought it was probably the most complete game we've played since we've been here in all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams. I thought our defensive line was very disruptive. We were able to play a lot of guys really in all areas and specifically on the defensive line. We're going to have to get those guys to continue to grow. I got to look at it, but I thought the D tackles kind of just watching the game had a strong presence. We need to just continue to develop our defensive ends, showing up in the pass game.
The opener went about as well as you could hope the opener to go. They played really, really well, and everything that we say is in the context of an opening game. This is not, that same kind of performance a month from now won't be good enough, and that same kind of performance 2 months from now won't be good enough. But in sports and in seasons, you have a building process. Well, in Penn State's building process, that's a really good start. It's a really good start. Welcome. Great to have you with us on the show. Neil Coulong is going to join us today. Tomorrow we have Bill Hillgrove, I believe, right?
We do tomorrow, 3:35. Get ready for some NFL regular season play for a change.
And we've got Joe Susan today. Looking forward to that.
Well, we will have Joe Susan on Thursday.
Thursday, okay.
Yes,
Thursday.
Yeah.
We were
hoping to have Joe today, but schedules and practicing going on in this time frame today and tomorrow. So we'll shoot for Thursday for Joe for sure.
They did a real number on Maris the other day. So, what was the final in that one?
What was it at last check? 48-6, something like that.
A big number.
45-6.
You're a failure. I put you on one job, and you missed by a point. Come on.
Yeah, three touchdowns by the Bison in the final 2 minutes of the opening quarter, so very early on, up 28-0.
And how did our high schools do on Friday night?
Sewens Grove, easy time over Montoursville. Mount Carmel getting the win over Shikellamy. Warrior Run defeated Milton in the Tomato Bowl. It was tight early on, and the Defenders cruised past them in the second half. weekend.
Lewisburg and Central Columbia.
Central Columbia, Blue Jays all over Lewisburg. Very rough night for the Green Dragons on Friday night. So Green Dragons are even 1-1. They will get Milton on Friday night. So it's week-to-week, another backyard rival game for Milton. And that'll be at Christie Friday night.
If you could separate Williams and Wetzel,
look out.
I mean, these rivalries. I mean, we might as well call in security.
Shamokin will be traveling to Seawinds Grove Friday night, and Central Mountain with a road trip down to Sunbury Friday night as they get Shikellamy.
Well, anything to make the Suits' life easier. I guess Shikellamy has all home games this year, right?
It seems like it.
What can we do to keep him home games?
But it is a good win by Mount Carmel over Schick. So, but next up, waiting in the wings for Mount Carmel will be Southern Columbia Friday night.
Hey, good luck. Good luck to you. All right, I want to get into, obviously, this is the pit week. And a lot of people, of course, will talk about, and while it's an adorable narrative, because you have to have some sort of narrative, you know me, I'm not big on adorable narratives. I'm more big, I'm bigger on the truth than adorable narratives. Last year, the narrative was, Pitt understands the rivalry, this means everything to them. Penn State is playing it cool. That was the narrative. All right. And first of all, for Pitt, they absolutely, it meant a lot to them. They played a really good offensive game, held on, won the game. And to their credit, late in the year, went to South Carolina and beat Clemson. So the approach for Pat Narduzzi in those couple of weeks, spot on. But Penn State's approach has been mischaracterized. They didn't understand the depth of emotion in the rivalry like this. Let me put it to you this way. Penn State used exactly the same approach for Pitt as it did for Ohio State. There's no change. Look, I see this. I watch this. So I don't really need a lot of help from any of you out there about this, because I don't see you there. All right? So this is one I'll handle. Okay? The same approach they use for Pitt is the same approach they use for Wisconsin. The difference is that the approach used for Ohio State was a team that had grown in confidence in its system, in their level of play. The Minnesota game really kind of broke things open for them. And so the approach then became magnified because now they had reps and confidence in all the new stuff that they were doing. And it made a big difference. Penn State, when it practices with pace, and they practice with emotion. This is what I don't think, that this is the part I don't think people get. And I think you'd have to be there to know what I'm talking about here. Right? They practice with emotion. If you make a big play on the practice field, it is celebrated out there. They do not just sit there with the card and go, that's terrific, let's go to play 9. Nice interception, Troy. Let's go to play 10 on the card. Nope. You make a play, the practice field lights up. So they always practice with emotion. Emotion is a part of what they're doing during the week of a game. Emotion is a part of the practice routine. That when something is done well, it is something that lights up the practice field. Players celebrate it, coaches celebrate it, and boom, then they go right to the next thing. That's what they do. That's how they practice. So it has nothing to do with, they don't quite understand Pitt. They don't understand the rivalry. The approach is how they go about it. They do this every week. If somebody makes a big play on the practice field tonight, they're going to jump up, high five, celebrate, boom, and quickly go to the next play. But the play, the great play that was just made, will be celebrated. It will be. Interception will be celebrated. Okay, boom. Then we go to the card says go to play 10. We're going to do a 10-minute celebration. It's going to be boom and go to it because they want big plays and they want it to be, they want that emotion in practice. They want that. And next Tuesday, in getting ready for Georgia State, if the same thing happens, they're going to celebrate it the same way. So while it can be an adorable narrative, in order that you have to come up with some narrative as to why they don't seem to understand the emotion of the, Pitt does. Penn State practices like this every week. Every week. It is not a stoic and stay practice. Okay, everybody, great job on play 7. Card says we go to play 8. Let's go to play 8. Fabulous. Great one-handed catch, Deshaun. Let's go to play 10. It's not how it's done. It's not how it's done. They want to practice with pace. They want to practice with some speed. And they also practice when something goes right with some emotion. That's how they've always practiced. It's the same approach every week. You know, there's a routine to it every week, but there's a lot of emotion in that routine. A lot, not a little, a lot. So maybe in the quarterback club, I'll bring this up tomorrow with him. And you won't change people's minds. I understand that. You know, we don't want the facts to get in the way of a story. We'll come back with more in a moment. News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at SunburyMotors.com, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, now let's get to the part, and this will be talked about a lot this week, about whether Penn State and Pitt should play every year. I think people, for the most part, know how I feel. And this is, look, and I am far, far from a newbie when it comes to this series. And I go back to, in terms of being around it, since 1975. So I was here during the golden age of this rivalry, which was pretty much from 74 to 83. I consider that to be the golden age of this rivalry, where both programs were really good, really stocked with talent. I felt strongly back then that Penn State and Pitt, just based on pure talent, had more talent out there than Alabama and Auburn did in that same period of time. Definitely had more talent on the field than Ohio State and Michigan did in that same period of time. Ohio State and Michigan were beating up on the Little Sisters of the Poor during that particular time. Nobody could compete with what they were doing in that conference at that time. If Penn State and Pitt happened to be playing in that conference, there's a good chance in that 10-year span, either Penn State or Pitt would have been the champion of the Big Ten, one or the other, in 8 of those 10 years. And you're just that much better than Ohio State and Michigan were at that time. And I don't want to hear about all the Bo and Woody stuff. I mean, look, when you're handed 9 wins and you got one you got to play, I mean, neither one of them played great non-conference schedules, any of that stuff. It's one of the reasons why their bowl record suffered as time went. So that time, you had a national champion in 76 in Pitt. Penn State played for the title in 78. Right, Pitt was number one in 81. Then we know, of course, the 48-14 game. And then Penn State won it in 82. So that game during that 10-year span produced two national champions and two teams that were ranked number one in the regular season. Penn State in 78 and Pitt in 81. So in a 10-year span, two national champs and two other teams that spent significant time as the number one team in the country in their respective years. They both were top five programs. But times have changed. Times have changed. And there's a lot to talk about with times changing, because Pitt had three major calculations to make in the 80s. And two they missed. And now the times have changed. It's not one's responsibility to make up for opportunities missed. You got to go with the times. And the one that they hit on was obviously the Big East was a great success in basketball for Pitt. Where they missed was that they were offered the opportunity to have Penn State on their football schedule for infinity by being in the same conference with them. They said no. And the other miscalculation was, after they were playing in the Big East in basketball for 6 or 7 years and still had Penn State in the football schedule, so they basically had everything the way they wanted it and felt comfortable with it, suddenly they got the news of Penn State's joining what? What? They're joining the Big Ten? Uh-oh. So you have an athletic department in the 80s that made two major miscalculations. Miscalculations like that bring with them long-term consequences. And you can complain about it all you want, but who made the mistake? They did. Is it the other guy's job to bail them out when they make a mistake?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades because they've been able to find their customers the right insurance and the best price. Fits your budget, and you're also covered. wide variety of insurance, auto, home, life, business insurance, all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for This Day in Sports History, then Neil Coulong will join us. On this day, sports history, the National Association of Professional Baseball Leagues formed in Chicago in 1901. It became the American League. Babe Ruth hit his first professional home run in the International League. And then, in 1918, he threw a six-hitter in the opening game of the World Series for the Red Sox. There was a point of 34 years where Babe Ruth held two major records: 15 World Series home runs, and 29 and two-thirds scoreless innings pitched. Amazing. 1920, Bill Tilden won the first of seven U.S. Open men's singles titles. 1955, Don Newcomb of the Dodgers hit his seventh homer of the season. It set a National League record for home runs by a pitcher. 1960, Cassius Marcellus Clay won the gold medal in the light heavyweight boxing division at the Olympic Games in Rome. Later, of course, he changed his name to Muhammad Ali. Let's see. Also in this date, John McEnroe fined $17,500 and suspended for 2 months for his behavior during a match with Slobodan Zivanovic. Chris Everett retired from professional tennis 19 years. If I recall, she was in a quarterfinal match, maybe round of 16. Zena Garrison beat her, I think. Mark McGwire's 60th home run this date, 1998, same day that Sammy Sosa hit his 58th. And that is a look at this day in sports history. Stunningly, Le'Veon Bell has decided this would be a good time to come back. As everyone knew he would, he signed that $12 million tender in what might be his final season as a Pittsburgh Steeler. We never have to worry about him signing tenders at all. He's always with us. That's Neil Coulong, USA Today.
Thanks for having me as usual. And yeah, it definitely is it's a good week for Le'Veon to get back out there.
Yeah, I would think so. Opening game coming up this week. Why not give it a shot, see how it goes? One thing that's interesting, he's had experience with missing starts of seasons, and they don't usually lighten the workload on him too much when he comes back, do they?
No, they don't, and they certainly won't now. I don't think they're really going to be too concerned about his future. All things considering and knowing the way the Steelers have done business, I'd say odds of him coming to an agreement on a contract extension in Pittsburgh or even getting franchise tagged again next year is very, very close to zero. With that, I think, you know, Mike Tomlin will unearth the classic, we're going to ride him until the wheels fall off and really, you know, aim to give him the ball 30-plus times a game. And to be honest with you, considering how good he is, I think that's a smart strategy regardless of where he's going to play next year. So, I would think it'd be nice to have Le'Veon Bell in a week one game, which hasn't happened a whole lot. And with that, just, you know, get him in game shape right away. Just you know, keep running him until his tongue's dragging on the ground. Make Cleveland stop him. I don't think they can.
Neil, running backs have a shelf life. There are certainly exceptions to the rule. Walter Payton and Emmitt Smith and people and Barry Sanders. You know, that's why they are the elite of the elite. They're able to have durability to go with great talent. Is this, when you look at Le'Veon Bell, do you see a durability in him? Or when we see the fact that he's only played in a couple of postseason games despite the Steelers' success, does that tell us something?
What I see in him really is a lot of very sudden kinds of injuries. You know, the injury that he took against Cincinnati when Vontaze Burfict rolled up over his knee,
right. That's
not a durability thing. He didn't wear down because of that. It's football. Unfortunately, that kind of thing happened. I think the groin issue last year that kept him out of most of the Patriots game might have been something closer to wear and tear simply because he had gotten the ball at a freakish rate over the last 10 games. It was something that I don't think a whole lot of people really paid as much attention to as they probably should have. Bell ran that team into the playoffs. You know, they were 4-5 and five before they started really making him the centerpiece of everything they were going to do. With that, I think, you know, you might make the argument that he wore down a little bit over time and eventually it just kind of gave out. But, you know, when the rubber meets the road, it's football. Injuries are going to come up. It's a physical game. Guys get hit. And when you're running as much as you are, eventually you're going to have soft tissue issues, even if you're in world-class shape the way the Le'Veon Bell is. So you do have to kind of concern yourself with that. And more than anything, how he's going to take care of himself during the season and after the season. Is he going to have himself, you know, at that peak level all the time? And I think part of the reason why he didn't go to camp was to try to maximize as many carries as he can get this season.
Last week, I asked you about the football team. You said the one area that you really looked at and puzzled by was what you watched in the preseason in the secondary. Since you made that statement, Joe Hayden has been signed and Wilcox was acquired in a deal from Tampa Bay. Do you get the feeling that they saw things the way you did?
Yeah, I think they heard me. I think they heard me and probably 50,000 other Steelers people that watched them and kind of wondered, really, what happened? I mean, if this is some type of new defense, which I'm not entirely sure that it was, what really happened to Ross Cockrell? Where's the communication level here? And really, how valuable is Mike Mitchell? With Mitchell being out the entire time, you saw a secondary that really didn't seem to work together very well, and they're not highly skilled players as it is. I expected in the offseason their secondary was going to take a step up. That's not at all what I saw over four games, and or at least three games of the preseason. And that might be lip service, but all of a sudden now they're you know signing a 28-year-old cornerback to a $27 million deal. They're making a trade for a serviceable backup safety after seeing probably Robert Golden really not live up to the job that he has now. William Gay is about to get beat out by a former undrafted free agent who has been cut by two teams previously. They did not, in my opinion at least, they did not get the secondary that they thought they were going to get, and they backpedaled, pun intended, very quickly to you know make changes in that before it became a bigger issue. And now you've got basically a whole new group of guys going out there for week one, and it's really going to be something, especially considering how well the Browns know Joe Hayden. It's going to be something I think they're going to exploit.
Well, I mean, and look, I give them credit for not being stubborn and saying, no, we're going to be fine here. I give them credit for saying, you know what, I think we've got a problem, too. Let's fix it. I think they deserve a lot of credit for at least admitting it and getting it done.
Yep, I agree. I agree. And some of this, too, it's coming on the heels of them knowing that they're going to keep Cam Sutton, but they're going to put him on injured reserve as soon as they're able to do that, which they did. And on top of that, I think that the Mitchell injury is still a concern, which required them to go out and get a veteran safety who could play. I'm not entirely sold on Golden even being on the team, but Jordan Dangerfield versus Golden, if Dangerfield is hurt, he's probably going to be the guy to go, and that's what happened. So they had to scramble to make those moves, but the fact that they made the Hayden move with no hesitation whatsoever, I mean, that deal was pretty much signed the second he got released.
Right.
They were on top of that right away. They weren't going to let him talk to anybody else. You definitely have to give them credit for that. And even if these aren't like the greatest moves you've ever seen in the history of the NFL, I enjoy the fact, I appreciate the fact that they are willing to do them and say, really, that how many more six-round draft picks do we need? We need guys that can play now. We have cap space. We've gone through, you know, kind of a transformation of our roster, and now we have a little bit of capital to spend. Let's get guys that can contribute to this team right now. Let's make this team as deep as we can and fill any, you know, glaring holes right away, because as we've talked about in this segment in the past, this team has started each of the last four seasons in far worse of a team than they'd finish up the year. Just imagine if for once they fought off this 4-4 nonsense to start the year. If they went 6-2, if they went 7-1, they're fighting for the top seed in the AFC. And that's something they haven't done in a while, if you think about it. So if these guys are going to come in and fill some of the holes and give them the ability to compete early on in the season, they'll be golden moves. And I'm not saying any of these guys are all pro players. They're probably not. But if they can establish depth so that the defense doesn't have a glaring weakness heading into week one, I think they're going to be more successful over the first 8 weeks.
Building for the future is something the Philadelphia Phillies or the Jacksonville Jaguars have to do out of necessity. I always feel that when you have a team that has a shot at it, that you go for it. And I feel like Bell probably in his last year with the Steelers They might feel that this is their chance to go for it. What do you think?
I would say two schools of thought on it, because I would have seen a two-year window maybe if you knew that Le'Veon Bell was going to come back for a second year.
Yeah.
The team, at least, you know, wants Bell back, considering the fact that they offered him a pretty good contract extension that he would eventually reject. The moves that they made, I don't necessarily think are indicative of the win now or else mentality, but all the pieces around that fit. The reality is, you're one injury away to your quarterback from a disastrous season, from basically having to start over from scratch. You have Antonio Brown locked up. You have a very expensive offensive line, and you've got a lot of young, talented defensive players who are going to need to get paid soon. Even with a salary cap that's increasing at a pretty, considerable margin, it has been for the last couple of years.
Right.
It's going to be tough to keep all of these guys together, and it really kind of boils down to the fact that everybody's in there right now. Everybody is healthy. Everybody's playing. This is going to be your best opportunity because you can't count on next year. So I don't necessarily think they're saying we have to do this now or else. They're saying we have a great team in front of us right now. We can win the Super Bowl with this team. But these are the things that we need to do. Our secondary didn't come along the way that it would. We've always respected Joe Hayden. Maybe he can come back from the injuries that he had last season. And if he did, he's going to be better than anybody else that we have on this roster. So we will get a lot better with him at $7 million this season, which if he plays at a high level, that's a steal.
Yeah.
So to me, they're definitely making those moves for the right reasons.
Well, what I find interesting, Neil, is this. They get Hayden, obviously, because he's released by the Browns. But they traded for McDonald, and they traded for Wilcox. Trades don't happen often in this league.
They hadn't up until now, which is really kind of interesting because people want to tie together a couple different concepts to that. One, that they're saying because the 75-man, the initial cut for the roster was eliminated, therefore there are more people that want to make moves to get ahead of other people in terms of waivers. But
okay.
McDonald, they traded they swapped picks essentially for McDonald, who had a big contract. That probably isn't the guy that's getting cut. If you're willing to trade that much, maybe they're going to keep him, maybe not, but maybe this is kind of the thing that inspired the Steelers to make the move. And in many ways, McDonald is a lot like Ladarius Green. And Green was a player they gave a lot of run to last year when he was healthy.
Right.
And people don't seem to average 16 yards a catch. That's pretty nice for a tight end, especially in an offense without Martavis Bryant. Put him back on the field now with another seam runner, another athlete like McDonald, it's going to be really hard to keep that team out of the end zone if they're at the 20-yard line. They can go for the end zone on basically two plays if they want to before even having to try to get a first down. So he's definitely a valuable piece, and the fact that they're willing to take on that salary as well as part with an asset, I think shows they have the means, the motive, and the opportunity to go a lot further than they have the last couple seasons. And McDonald isn't going to be probably worth the contract that he has, but if he can give you four targets a game, three catches, and 50 yards, you're really, really happy. And in that case, his contract doesn't really matter at all. It just makes the offense that much more dangerous. And I think they're starting to see the value in kind of specialty players like that, guys that can do one thing only. Even if we're overpaying for it, he's going to bring value to our team.
Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Great to hear you with the season now finally upon us.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. News Radio 1070 WKOK is your home for Shikellamy Braves football and basketball. So join them on Friday night when they take on Central Mountain. Looking forward to that one as another big high school football weekend takes place. We're up to week number 3 on the season. Under the category of wow. I mean, it's moving along quickly. And Milton's going to play Lewisburg this week. So we got a good old-fashioned backyard scrap on tap coming up this week. And Penn State and Pitt this week. I was talking earlier about, Pitt made two major miscalculations in the 80s. And one, they, for at least a period of time, they got exactly right by joining the Big East. But joining the Big East in basketball also meant they shelved the opportunity to be in an Eastern All-Sports Conference. Joe Paterno was on, worked heavily with television with Chuck Nienas and the College Football Association. He saw where it was going. College football was not the lucrative, exposure-wise, great, but not as anywhere near as lucrative as it was about to become. It was when the Georgia and Oklahoma lawsuit opened the door and gave really the power to the schools and the conferences to make deals. You know, the NCAA does not make deals when it comes to college football. They have the NCAA basketball tournament, but they don't negotiate the deals for college football. You know, the Big Ten just announced their deal with Fox, ESPN, BTN, and CBS in basketball. But that's the Big Ten's deal. NCAA doesn't have anything to do with that. And but the NCAA does have everything to do with the postseason basketball tournament. Well, when it comes to college football, the conferences negotiate. I mean, they negotiate that. Well, Joe saw all of this happening. In fact, a lot of people don't realize that the College Football Association, before NBC had its deal together with Notre Dame, the College Football Association, led by Chuck Nienas and Joe Paterno, had negotiated a deal with NBC. And that was put on hold until this Oklahoma-Georgia thing was settled. Then it was settled, and then they eventually cut another deal instead with CBS. Well, Pitt didn't see any of this. And they decided to go with the Big East, and because Dave Gavitt was another visionary at the time. There's no organized Eastern basketball, and what Dave Gavitt did was remarkable. So Pitt went that direction, and for the first, from what, 82, I think, is when they actually got in, 81, 82, up until 89, they had Big East basketball, and they had Penn State in the schedule every year because they were both independents. So they had everything the way they wanted. And then the next one fell out of the sky, which they didn't count on. And that was Penn State joining the Big Ten. They never counted on that. So they made two major miscalculations in the 80s that has cost them. And Penn State's obligation is to make sure financially that they're getting money for their 31 sports. That's why the model's in place where they have to have seven home games. You can, I know fans complain, oh, they got to play Akron and Georgia State. Oh, they got to play Appalachian State. They're going to play Idaho. I understand that completely. Completely understand where you're coming from. But the issue is, in order to have a 31 sport model like they have here, part of the financial formula is to have seven home football games, which means you have to have two games you need to buy every year. It's as simple as that, minimum. Which leaves you now with one slot available. If there were eight Big Ten games, I could go for Pitt being on the schedule every year. I could go for every year. It's fine. If there were eight conference games. Why can Clemson, South Carolina, Florida, Florida State, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Louisville, and Kentucky, why can they afford to play each other every year? Because guess what the SEC and the ACC have in common? They each play eight conference games. So now they have the flexibility to schedule differently. Pitt, for example, will play Penn State. Then they've got Oklahoma State at home. Two really good non-conference games for Pitt. Penn State is in a boat because of what the Big Ten has done. Look at the Big Ten did what they did to help out Indiana, Purdue, Illinois, Northwestern. They did that to help out attendance. And also, it means that the Big Ten can control more inventory with that extra weekend being conference play.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies, News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.